Thank you for your prayers. I don't know, for some reason this week has seemed hectic. Some of it was my fault. Some of it maybe was out of my control. So I don't know. I'll read a verse later on that says, fighting's without and fear's within. I thought it was like weariness without and maybe weakness within. But anyways, there's different ways. And so let's just pray for me and let's look at what God has for us. And maybe up front I should just say I'm... apologize if my format isn't real understanding friendly. I hope it is, but seemed this ended up being more of a study, maybe for myself, that I'm sharing. So in some ways, I'm not quite sure if it's put together the way I'd like, but we'll try to make the best of that. Okay, how many of you were here? Oh, it's a few weeks now when I had the message on correction. Do you remember anything on that? Okay, so I said our words between and with each other serve four purposes. Do you remember what those four were? And by the way, when we get into this, I'm going to have a lot of verses to read. I'd like for y'all to help. So this is going to be what we call, I'll get into that later. Maybe I shouldn't even call it a message. Maybe it's just an interactive teaching. But I want y'all help, the ladies included. So don't be shy. Just pipe up and... So, and you don't have to have the order right, but there was four main purposes our words, our communication with each other serve. Can you fill me in on what those were again? See your memory, where your memory's at. Well, the one should be pretty easy. I just asked you which message you remembered, so you should be able to get that one at least. Anyone? Okay, instruction is one. We could call that teaching to expand knowledge. Okay, thank you. Another one?
Information.
Information, thank you. Well, you're even getting the order right now, so that's the order I've had to inform. Probably most of our general is to just share thoughts and ideas, is to inform each other. Okay, and the last two?
Correction.
And now one more. Encourage. Thank you. Good job. So last time I felt like I talked about the one we probably least enjoy, at least I do. I don't know about you all, and the correction one. So I'm going to swap that around this morning. I'm going to talk about the one I like the best, or at least I think I like the other three fairly well. Probably depends on what it is. But I want to talk about the art of encouragement is what I've decided to call it. Probably the one that most people like the best and are most open to receiving. The art of encouragement. And the reason I call it the art is it's something that takes time, effort, practice, and persistence. You know, some of you do have a lot more talent for art than what I do. If you're talking about drawing and all that kind of stuff, or folding papers, whatever you have, you can go do this stuff and it actually works for you. For me, it doesn't. Maybe I have some other form of art, or I'd at least like to think so, that goes a little bit better for me. But even in that, even in something you're good at, if you're really going to be excellent, if you're really going to be a blessing with this, you still have to put a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of practice, and a lot of persistence. You know, as much as I like to watch my daughter draw and all that stuff, if I would pay her $300 or $400 for her picture, it's because I'm her dad, not because it's so great, right? But there are some other pictures I probably would pay that for because the person has put time and effort into it. So the art of encouragement, and just so we're clear on encouragement, I'd like to think of that to inspire, to stimulate, and to foster a desire to keep on and or achieve and grow in a certain area. So encouragement, encourage, to encourage someone. Let's ask you something else, see if you know this. Does the Bible use the word encourage in any form? It could be encouragement, encourage. Does the Bible use that word anywhere? Go ahead. It won't hurt you if you're wrong. No, did somebody else say something? I'm sorry.
I said yes.
Yes? Okay. Well, thank you all. I appreciate it. And thanks, Eric. I guess this time you will be wrong, but that's fine. Don't take that bad. It's used 9 times. Now, a lot of that is not necessarily in the Well, it's used as to encourage, but one place especially is to actually encourage each other in the wrong thing. Another place it's used when David, be close to the adult Sunday school lesson where David was going to get stoned by his men. It says he encouraged himself in God, so it does use it a few times. I won't read a lot of those verses because they don't necessarily lend to the context. I will use two of them. I'm going to keep your Bibles fairly warm this morning, so to speak. So let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 1. And while you're turning there, quick before you get there, we have, before you read that, you can turn to Deuteronomy chapter 1, but before you read that, two of these times that the word encouraged is used is to encourage the same person. Once it was a group of people that were to encourage this person, another time it was a certain individual. So do you want to guess who was supposed to be encouraged? Anyone know without looking? There was one person in both these references. The same person was supposed to be encouraged by other people. One time by a big group and one time by one individual. Does anyone know? Okay, that's fine. Why don't we just read Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 38. It says, "But Joshua, the son of Nun, which standeth before thee, he shall go in thither, encourage him, for he shall cause Israel to inherit it," speaking of the land of Canaan. So here, if you look at the context, Moses has Joshua before Israel, and he's saying that he says it a little bit different, but basically because he disobeyed God, God is telling him he can't go in and Joshua needs to lead out. And so now Moses tells Israel, "But Joshua, the son of Nun, the one that stands before you here, he shall go in thither instead of me. Encourage him, for he shall cause Israel to inherit, or he will cause you to inherit Canaan." So we have Joshua was the one to be encouraged, and Israel, as I understand the context, was to do the encouraging. Now, if you go to Deuteronomy chapter 3, verse 28, just over another chapter, God talking to Moses here, as I understand it, basically the same thing, but says, "Charge Joshua and encourage him and strengthen him, for he shall go over before this people, and he shall cause them to inherit the land which thou shalt see." So now Moses is told to encourage Joshua. Okay, now before we go further into this, I'd like for you all to think of some synonyms, especially ones used in Scripture, that have the same general meaning as encouragement or to encourage. In other words, when I say synonyms, other words that the Bible would use instead of encouragement, because it does have some other words that basically mean the same thing, but that we maybe don't use them quite as much that way today. So anybody want to give me a few? Can you think of any other words?
Exhort.
Okay. Any more? I think I had too much time to think about this and y'all not enough, huh? Okay, that's fine. We won't waste a lot of time on it. I exhort could, and thanks. Thank you, Hope, for that one. That one also could go quite a bit beyond encouragement into instruction and it as well. But yeah, we'll let it up there because it covers it. You could exhort with encouragement. Some of the others would be inspire. Let's see. Hearten, as in give courage. Strengthen, that one was just used. Moses was told to to encourage and strengthen. Comfort is one that's used a lot, and you'll see that as we go along. Comfort, let's see, cheer is one that's used in Deuteronomy as well. Console, now I know this one goes beyond simple encouragement. It means more to kind of comfort, but even stronger, more in grief or something like that. Support would be another one. And I think the last one, unless you want to add one, is refresh, is used a few times in the New Testament. Does anybody want to add any more? So we have exhort, inspire, hearten, strengthen, comfort, cheer, console, support, and refresh. Okay, now, recently, talking with someone, they said that they Of course, they were talking what they were familiar with. They said that they thought they were. They lived in a Mennonite church, and they said they felt like the Mennonites are very unappreciative people that don't express appreciation for things. I don't know. I don't think I would necessarily say that. He thought that was a Mennonite problem. So do you think it is? Is that an Amish Mennonite cultural problem? Or weakness, whatever you want to call it? The reason the subject even came up is he had met somebody that was not from that culture at all. And I think they had tipped him $50 to do a small job or something. And he felt pretty good about them. He didn't think a Mennonite would ever do that. So I don't know, maybe he wouldn't. I probably haven't tipped a lot of people $50. I can't recall that I haven't. I'd probably remember if I had. So maybe he's right. I do think overall it's probably a human weakness. But think about it, whether it's a weakness I have, let's say it that way. I don't have to make it broader than that, and that's bad enough. But I told you that in the one about correction that there seems to be an imbalance on that, and I think there's maybe, if possible, even a bigger imbalance on encouragement. You know, just as the giving of information, the giving of instruction, and the giving of encouragement without correction is not a successful formula, neither is the sharing of information and the sharing of instruction and the sharing of correction while withholding encouragement a positive or, can I say, very successful way to help someone. It doesn't work real well. And here's a couple things where encouragement fills kind of a unique place in our communication that the others don't or can't as well. I think, you could correct me, as I thought about this, I believe everyone desires sincere encouragement. They may not always want encouragement in the right thing. I would say that's correct. But I think everybody still wants encouragement. From the most mature Christian, we'll read some verses where Paul thanked people for the encouragement they were to him, to the worst heathen of them all. I think we all just kind of like something that somebody says, yeah, good job, or you're doing the right thing, or keep working on it. I think all of us like that to a degree. Also, another unique thing about encouragement is it has a way of getting through defenses that we set up against information, instruction, and correction. For example, they say that we live in the information age, and that's probably true. Quite frankly, you have to pick and choose. There's so much information out around us, available to us through books, through different types of media. There's no way for you to absorb all of it. So you're going to decide that you want some of this and you don't want some of it, right? And so you set up, you block or tune out the information that you don't want. We choose the information we want. And we also block or tune out, especially as adults, we probably do this more than I should, but I block or tune out the instruction I don't desire. It's one thing if I come and ask you for information. Makes me think of, actually just crossed my mind now, there's a brother in Oregon when I was out there, he said one of his pet peeves is when people answer a question that wasn't asked. And I probably could go along with that because, you know, you get this long, windy answer to something you don't even want to know about. You just kind of block it. That instruction's just not there. And also another thing that we see a lot, and I think this isn't just in the U.S., but when it comes to correction, we often either run away from correction or we just rebel against it. But most of us readily take encouragement when we can get it. We like it. We're kind of open to encouragement. At least if we feel it sincere. If somebody comes and is saying, you did a good job, but we just know that they're doing that because they want to feed us 10 points where we failed. Well, it's a little hard to take the encouragement, right? I understand. At the same time, if the encouragement's sincere, we like it. And I'll just give you a little bit of an illustration how this worked for me. One of these people is here and one isn't. And so that's probably good because the one here was the one that encouraged me. But I preached a message one time, and the one person come to me and basically told me that I don't preach right. He said I give too much explanation. I guess I've treated him too much like a first grader, he thought, and he's probably right. And he says, I teach rather than preach, which I actually was aware of that, but I need a different view on that too. That's fine. And then he went on to say that I talk about my and others' experiences too much. I should just, anyway, skip that. Well, that's what the one did, and I appreciated him sharing. At the same time, I'm human enough that I struggled with that a little bit, trying to sort through all that. The other one, he might have actually thought the same thing. I don't know. I didn't ask him. Maybe I should still do that. But he didn't say that. What he said is, he talking about the one of the same messages, he said, you did something a bit different this time. He said, you used a lot of scripture. And so, okay. So I'm doing it again. So I guess the encouragement worked, right? But what I'm saying is, as I thought later about the two people that shared there, what was interesting is the last one, I took that as positive. And then later I thought about it, it's like, you did something a bit different this time. You used a lot of scriptures. I thought, well, now, you know what? I guess to just be real realistic, he could have said I wasn't doing a good job before. But he didn't really say that. He just said that it's different this time. See, that's how we work. Encouragement kind of gets in the door, whereas criticism or whatever kind of, what's going on here? Okay, another thing about encouragement is encouragement has a special way of getting people's attention. And this one's kind of funny, actually, but it actually worked. Little people talk a lot, or at least the ones out of my house talk a lot. And so the result of that is when you talk as much as some of us do, the result is that sometimes adults just don't listen to what you say. They hear the noise, but they just don't hear the words. Well, one small individual in our house had this problem solved for a while. She figured out that if she told the girls or ladies that they have a nice dress, they would pay attention real well for a bit. I just amused me seeing her do that. She'd go up and say, I like your dress. I don't know where in the world she got it, but they just boom. I mean, she had their full attention without fail, it seemed like, for at least the next couple minutes. Encouragement kind of just sneaks in there. We like it well enough that when somebody says something nice about my dress or my shirt or my truck, like, oh, yeah, okay. So you like it. Well, I like it too, you know. So it kind of sneaks in there. Another thing is customer service people, and I'm on both sides of this, and it's kind of fascinated me as well. I do a business with a couple companies that are very adept at just messing up bad in their orders. And it's easy to kind of get, you're wasting my time kind of attitude and call them up, you know, straighten this up, get it fixed. But I've found I have a lot better results if I call them up and say, hey, I know this isn't your fault, but, you know, this is just not what I was expecting. And do you think you would have enough time to just fix this up for me? I really appreciate it if you could. And I usually get a lot better results with a customer service person if I deal that way than if I say, hey, you guys are just messing up my order again. I mean, can't you ever get it right? Just fix it up. Again, they respond totally different. And it's because encouragement. Encouragement sneaks in there, and they become part of the solution rather than the problem. And I want to add maybe a caution or a warning on this. It's easy, and I think I do this sometimes. A certain form or practice of encouragement can actually be selfish. And that, just use the illustration I just used, and that I can use it to further my own agenda. And I'm not saying that's all wrong, because it does work to a degree, but to really have encouragement be a blessing to me and to others in a Christian way, it has to be the fruit of a genuine selflessness of the Christian life. Okay? Let's see. I've got a list of 10 people the Bible fairly directly tells us we need to encourage. And then it also gives us some ideas on how to encourage. So I'd like to have your help on this. I'd like to give out references, and I said, ladies, girls, feel free to help. I would like for everybody to stand and read their reference clearly. I'll give them out and just repeat it after me, because I have quite a few. Job chapter 2, verse 11 through 13. Proverbs 17, verse 17. John chapter 15, verse 12 and 13. Deuteronomy chapter 24, verse 5. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 28 and 29. Okay, Isaiah 40, verse 1 and 2. Philemon, verse 7. Luke chapter 22, verse 31 through 32. We're running out of people that do it readily. Thank you. Hey, the rest of you, I'd really appreciate if you helped. There's plenty to go. Romans 15, verse 4 through 6. 1 Thessalonians 4, 18 and 5, 11. Okay, thank you. 1 Corinthians 14, verse 3. 1 Thessalonians 3, verse 1 through 3. 2 Corinthians, verse 1, 2 Corinthians 1, verse 3 through 5. 2 Corinthians 7, verse 5 through 7 and 13. Well, I think I know a few of you that don't have verses yet, so you want me to say your name or you want to take it on your own? 2 Corinthians 7, verse 5 through 7 and 13. You got it? Okay. Thank you, Glenn. We're getting there, but I got a few more yet. If you want the message to get done soon, you'll help perk up quick. 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 6 through 8. Galatians chapter 6, verse 1 and 2. Galatians chapter 6, verse 1 and 2. Sam, I'll let you take that one. Sean, go ahead with Ephesians chapter 4, verse 32. The next one, 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 14. 5:14. Thank you. Hebrews 12, 12 and 13. 12, 13. Isaiah 35, verse 3. That's a short one in case somebody wants a short one. 35, verse 3. Okay, and I'll finish the rest. Let's see here. Okay, so who should we be encouraging? And also notice how it was done. Actually, when I started working on this, I thought, well, I'm sure the Bible it teaches us to encourage people, but how much does it actually have? And I was like, oh, wow, I didn't even get started, honestly. It's amazing. I think I've said this in the message on correction that this says you should offer three times encouragement as what you do correction. And I almost decided maybe Scripture does in a way. We don't often think of it. At least I didn't. But there's a lot there. Okay. The first person we should encourage are those I am responsible to and accountable, as in leaders. And I read that already in Joshua. There's other verses, but we'll let it with that so far as the one about Joshua. Encourage him. And I think people who have not experienced that probably don't realize that discouragement is one of the biggest temptations that a leader faces, I would say. There's different temptations. I don't know if it's fair to say it's the biggest, but it's definitely one of the bigger ones for me, is the discouragement. And I wish there was some way of telling you how much expressions of support, appreciation, and acceptance, backed by a life and action, of course, are one of the most beautiful gifts you can give to a leader. Of whatever capacity. That's just, yeah, I really appreciate that, and I appreciate you as a church in how you do that. So two leaders. The second one is to my friends. Job chapter 2, verse 11 through 13. Whoever, can you read that, please?
Now when Job's three friends heard all this evil that was coming
Thank you. And you know, you can accurately say a lot of bad things about these friends, but they had, I'll come into it a bit later, but they had some four very good traits when it came to encouraging. They missed the fifth one. I have five. But they did a lot of things right, and we'll look at that in a bit later. Okay, Proverbs 17:17. Okay, a friend loveth at all times. You know, and I, taking that a bit further, a friend not only, he loves you at all times, and he also knows how to share with you in that time. Are you happy? He's happy with you. Are you sad? He's sad with you. A friend loveth at all times. Okay, the next one is John chapter 15, verse 12 and 13. Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. And then, you know, I'm kind of doing this backwards, but Christ is saying that this is the greatest definition of love. And if we go back to verse 12, he's actually saying we are supposed to love the way he did. And he did that. He was willing to encourage to the extent that he was willing to die so that we could have encouragement in, as part of that package. Okay, so that's about my friends. In a way, a personal sense. Okay, now the next one is actually a person I'm supposed to encourage is my wife. Now the verses I use are focused on the wife. I think it runs both ways. In case you wives didn't know it, husbands need encouragement, and there's probably nobody better to know when I need encouragement than my wife is. At the same time, we'll use these verses. Deuteronomy chapter 24, verse 5. Okay. Now, maybe this was more necessary in that time than it is today, because if you think about it, these were arranged marriages, and so they didn't know each other. So they probably needed that year to get to know each other, and I don't know. If you would take a girl today and marry her to somebody she doesn't know, she would be pretty discouraged, I think. So maybe they needed the encouragement worse. But even so, let's also look at the next verse, Ephesians chapter 5, verse 28 and 29. Okay. You know, one thing that's interesting, for those of us who are married, when I encourage my wife when she needs it, guess what happens? Is that it actually ends up encouraging me. I know one couple, good friends of ours, and they were facing some difficult circumstances. But they said, you know, it really wasn't that bad, because every time he felt down in the dumps about it, she felt it was workable. Every time she felt like it was impossible, he felt like, we can work through this. And so they said that it worked out all right. And to me, that's beautiful, in that when I encourage my wife, in reality, I end up encouraging myself. And not only that, it says everybody nourishes and cherishes their own body. And again, that's... You know, to nourish and cherish would include encouragement and commendation. In fact, if a couple's struggling in communication and things, one of the more interesting things to have them do is to sit down and just tell each other what they like about each other. Just privately, of course. And it's a beautiful thing. Try it sometime if you don't believe me. Okay, we'll move on. So the fourth one is... First, this is a group of people we are to encourage, is God's people. Isaiah chapter 40, verse 1 and 2. By the way, I should say, if you're more comfortable staying seated and you can read loud, that's okay. I guess I did say stand, but it's fine. Okay, comfort ye, my people. You know, in a way, this was actually still at the time that judgment was being pronounced. Yet God is also wanting to encourage them as they come to him, as they become broken. He says, comfort ye, my people. Speak comfortably to Jerusalem, God's people. Cry unto her. Make some effort. Get inspired about it. Okay, Philemon chapter 1 verse, well, excuse me, Philemon verse 7. Oh, what a testimony. So Paul is saying to Philemon that, you know, we have great joy. We have consolation in your love because the bowels, the heart of the place of the emotions is bowels in Hebrew, hearts in English, of the saints are refreshed in thee, brother. Interesting. So are we refreshing other people? Okay, I think that's, you know, to comfort and refresh God's people is actually one of my primary responsibilities as a Christian. In fact, we won't read all these verses, but if we go to Matthew chapter 25, verse 30 through 40, we have God talking to the ones on the right hand and says, and he's saying, you know, you clothed me when I needed clothes. You visited me when I was sick and in prison. You came to me. And the righteous on the right hand say, when did we see you need these things? And he says, as ye have done it unto the least of these, my brethren, ye have done it unto me. So to comfort and refresh God's people, not necessarily only in a physical sense, probably even much more in the emotional and spiritual sense, is actually to have done it for Christ. Think about that. So the next time your brother or sister is down in the dumps and you have a chance to put your arm around them and encourage them, you're doing it for Christ. Think about that. To me, that's pretty special because, you know, I couldn't be at Calvary when Christ felt like he really needed a friend. But yet I can be there for the people around me today. Okay, moving on. The next one's very close. But I have it worded, those I meet who are seeking God. Or we could say each other is what it uses in some of these. The first one is to Peter, Christ talking to Peter. Luke chapter 22, verse 31 and 32. Okay, strengthen thy brethren. A part of being converted, actually. It's like, Simon, when you're converted, this is the job I have for you. Okay, Romans chapter 15, verse 4 through 6. Okay, notice verse 5 there says, now the God of patience and consolation grant you that ye be like-minded. In other words, that you would think like God does about your brother and sister, those around you. That ye be like-minded one to another according to Christ. Okay, and then the next one on that one was 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verse 18 and also 5, verse 11. Okay, it's actually a command. Comfort one another. Encourage each other. Be there for each other. Okay? You know, As part of the body of Christ, it's my duty and my privilege to encourage others who are seeking to serve God. In fact, in the Gospels, it would tell us that if I discourage someone from serving God, rather than encourage them, it's better for a millstone to be hanged about my neck and that I'm cast into the midst of the sea. Okay, so that was number 5. Each other, those I meet who are seeking God. The 6th one is those I share God's word with. In one context, it's used as somebody that preaches, a prophet. In the other context, it's not so much. But those I share God's word with. 1 Corinthians chapter 14, verse 3. Okay, but he that prophesieth speaketh. In other words, this is the reason he talks, a prophet, to edify, to exhort, and to comfort, to encourage. Then Thessalonians verse 3, excuse me, 1 Thessalonians 3, verse 1 through 3. Okay, and here I'm talking to myself as much as anyone. But you know, if every time I share, it is to point out the needs and the faults of those who are listening, I actually am not sharing the complete gospel of Christ. There may be a time for that. Yes, correction is part of this package. At the same time, Paul says right here that he sent Timothy, his brother, a minister of God and fellow laborer of the gospel of Christ, to establish and to comfort you concerning the faith. That's a very vital part of actually preaching and sharing, is it in a Bible study or anything else, is to encourage, to help others. If every time I share is to point out a need or a fault, I'm actually hindering the gospel rather than promoting it. Okay, the seventh one that need encouragement are those in tribulation and trouble. 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 3 through 5. That's fine, no problem. 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 3 through 5. Thank you. You thought about that in verse 4? Talking of God who comforteth us in all our tribulation. So God comforts me as I come to him. And one of the reasons he does that is that we may be able to comfort them which are in trouble. So if I want God to encourage me, to help me in my life, I actually owe it to God, if you want to use those words, to pass that on. That's why he did it, partly encourage me, was so that I could encourage others. Okay, 2 Corinthians chapter 7. Let's see, make sure. 2 Corinthians 7, verse 5 through 7, and then verse 13. Okay, thank you. When I was in school, we had this poem. I think it was about a smile. Or was it a kind deed? Now I'm getting confused. But it compared it to throwing a rock in a pond and how the ripples, and the phrase I remember is how the ripples go on and on and on. I don't know if any of you remember that. I wish I should have looked that poem up. But encouragement is very much like this. I just told you that if God encourages us, he expects it to do it for others. Now notice how the church here in Corinth had encouraged Titus. Titus traveled to where Paul and the others with him were and encouraged them. And the reason, at least part of the reason that Titus could encourage them was because he had been so encouraged by the church at Corinth. And see how it goes on and on and on. And then Paul in turn now is writing this letter back to the church in Corinth, and I trust it was an encouragement to them. So you see how it goes around? If you hoard there and you sit there and you hoard the encouragement God gives you, it won't go any further than you. But now if you encourage the next person, that person encourages the next person, sooner or later, that will come back around to you again. And I was just fascinated by that. It says, for our flesh had no rest. He talks about those fightings and fears I mentioned earlier. But it says, but the God who comforts those that are cast down comforted us by the coming of Titus, and not by his coming only, but by the consolation or even through the comfort that he had received in you. Because, in verse 13, his spirit was refreshed by you all. Isn't that beautiful? You know, when I or you face fightings and fears, it's the encouragement of others that keeps us going. And that's why this encouragement is such a vital part of the Christian life and the church experience. Okay, the eighth one, also a very important one, is those who have been corrected and are disciplined. 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 6 through 8. 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 6 through 8. Okay, thank you. So here we have a person that messed up, quite frankly. And we could say, but Paul is saying now, you know, there was a time to correct, but now is the time to comfort him. Now is the time to rally around him and encourage him to spiritual growth, rather than just letting him be swallowed up in overmuch sorrow. And so he tells him to confirm his love. What a way to express encouragement. Confirm your love. I like that phrase. Okay, the next one right along with this is Galatians chapter 6, verse 1 and 2. Okay, right on Ephesians chapter 4, verse 32. Correction and discipline to be what God meant for it to be must always be accompanied by forgiveness and encouragement, or it leads to despair and hopelessness. And that's not what God intended through correction. Okay, the ninth one, getting to the end here, is the feeble-minded. And in case the verse we will read actually uses the feeble-minded and weak, in case you think it means somebody that's not all there, that's not what it means. At all. It means somebody like me. Maybe I'm not all there. I don't know. We'll let you decide that. But it means faint or low in spirit is what feeble-minded means. And weak actually would mean the one without strength. Strengthless, if we can say that, which isn't correct. But okay, 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 14. Okay, he uses two different words here, comfort and support, but basically means the same. Encourage the faint. Encourage the weak. Okay, Hebrews 12, verse 12 and 13. Okay, and right away, Isaiah 35, verse 3. And 4, I'm sorry, it was Isaiah 35, verse 3 and 4. Okay, thank you all so much for that. Maybe you all feel like this, but the picture you get about the, let's see, strengthen the weak hands and the feeble knees. I don't know if any of you, I haven't run a marathon, I probably should try, but the picture it is of somebody that has run for all their work, they've just worked and ran, and they're getting to the end, they're just almost not taking the next step. That's the picture's painting is of a runner that his knees are almost buckling, his arms, he just doesn't have any strength to raise them. As lift up the hands which hang down, and the feeble knees, and make straight paths for your feet, which... lest the lame be turned out of the way. In other words, that's God's work for you. Is those that are weak, those that are tired, that you're there supporting them and helping them cross the finish line, so to speak. Okay, the tenth one is that of the group of people or person that I need to encourage is my children. For us as parents, our children, and for all of us, it could be children of any age as we have opportunity to relate to them. And I'll read the verses here. And these are not as direct as some, but Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4 says this, "And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord." So first of all, we're told not to provoke to wrath, and I would like to suggest to you that if I as a dad, and I've done too much of this, I'm asking God's grace in my life to help me grow, but if I'm always just imparting information, I'm always giving instruction, I'm always giving correction, but I'm never giving encouragement and commendation, it will build a bitter child. I've experienced it to a certain extent as a child, and I've also think I've been too much that way as a parent. The second verse there on that one is Colossians chapter 3, verse 21. It says, "Fathers, provoke not your children to anger, lest they be discouraged." So what's the opposite of discouraged? Is encouraged. So how do I not provoke my children to wrath? Is by encouraging them. by saying good job, by commending them where they've done right. And especially for me, and again, I'm not critical of the, I want to be careful, I'm not here to put down any setting or anything. At the same time, growing up in our home, Mom and Dad gave me an awful lot to build on, but that was one thing that I don't think Dad really saw at that point. I think he sees a lot more since. And that is, there was not what I would call positive motivation. If I had a job to do, generally my motive for getting the job done was a punishment if it didn't get done. And I'm not saying that that's, please understand, correction has its place. I'm not all suggesting we run away from correction one bit. But that said, I as a father have found out that at least some children just respond a lot better to an encouragement like a goal, having a goal or some sort of prize at the end. And I think it'd be wrong for me to not at least use that aspect at least some. Just always punishment. It doesn't build a strong relationship. Yes, where there's direct disobedience and the job, there's running away from the job, I feel punishment's in order. At the same time, to inspire through encouragement, I think, is something I need to grow in anyway as a parent. So to provoke not requires encouragement and commendation. The power of positive motivation, something I definitely need to learn. I'm saying that to myself. And I thank those of you who have helped me actually see some of that. Okay, now making this practical, I don't have just a lot more, but how do we encourage others? Let's go back to Job chapter 2, the verses Phil read. We got some interesting things here. If I would ask most of you, do you want friends like Job's friends? You would say no. But really, stop and think about it here. I know why you say that, but let's look at Job chapter 2, verse 11. Hope Phil doesn't mind if we look at that a bit more. Let's see. Where do I have those verses? How do we encourage others? Number one is we must come to them. Let's look at Job's three friends. Now, when Job's three friends heard of all this evil that had come upon him, they came every one from his own place. So you have three probably important, busy people that actually made arrangements to go see Job. Job is suffering. Job has problems. Job needs encouragement. And so they actually dropped their work and went. And to me, they did a great thing there. Too often, I think it's easy to say, well, that's somebody else's responsibility. I know that person is discouraged, but hey, that's not my job. Really? We drop our work and go, okay? So that's positive example number one from them. Positive example number two is we must care for them. Let's go back to these verses. End of verse 11. Gives us where they were from and their names. It says, for they had made an appointment together to come to mourn with him and to comfort him. Notice these fellows didn't come actually for what they ended up doing. I think they came with pure motives. They came because they genuinely liked Job and they wanted to be with him during his difficult time. They came to mourn with him. You don't go to mourn with someone if you hate him. So these, I guess I up to this point, I have to feel like they were trying to do the right. You must care for the person. The third one is we must share in what they face. Job's friends did this to a degree, I'll say. They didn't go as far as they should have. But notice verse 12. It says, when they lifted up their eyes afar off and knew him not, I guess to me that's saying it didn't look like Job, but they knew it had to be him. So they lifted up their voice and wept and rent everyone his mantle and sprinkled dust upon their head toward heaven. Now, again, these people were willing, to an extent anyway, to share in what Job faced. You don't just tear your clothes up and put dirt on all over your head just because for fun of it, do you? These guys were fairly serious to an extent. So that was the third positive. They must share in what they faced. The fourth positive is, I don't know whether you'll like this one or not. It hurts sometimes. But it is, we must be honest. In encouraging others, we must be honest. And there's a couple ways you can take this. Even all they said in these next chapters was wrong and critical. At the same time, one thing you have to give them is that they told Job right to his face. They weren't out there gossiping. Say, hey, do you know what, Job, he had this happen, and that only happens to people that are wicked. You know, Job, he must have some big sin in his life. When they felt that he had sin in his life, they at least told him direct. And that's another positive example, number four. To talk about people behind their back and say, hey, you know, so-and-so did this and this. It doesn't build one thing. You're not encouraging at all. And maybe honesty isn't always encouraging either when it's done with a critical spirit, but at least you won't gain anything by taking that away yet. And the fifth one that they totally missed is try to understand and help bear the burden. Unfortunately, Job's friends, I somehow lost this one. You do have to wonder if there was a bit of envy there, but we'll have to let that with them and God. But whatever the reason, they failed to try to understand what Job was going through, and they totally failed, at least outside of sitting there quiet 7 days, in helping him bear his burden. I imagine till they were done, Job wished they would have sat another 21 days quiet. Now, I've wondered, but at the same time, thinking about these fellows, I don't know. Do you have any friends that love you enough to come sit around and not say a peep for 7 days? Yeah, they were pretty serious up to the extent. You can pick on them all you want. But I really think they went to encourage, and yes, they made some mistakes, but I have to admire that. I don't know. I honestly don't know. What would you do if I thought you were having a hard time? I'd come sit in your house quiet for 7 days. I don't know what you'd do with me. We aren't used to that. But these guys were serious about it. I guess I haven't seen any of you sitting out in ashes either, so maybe that would change. But anyway, so let me just run over those real briefly. Is we must come to them. Go to the person. You must care for them. You must share in what they face. You must be honest with them. And you must at least try to understand and help bear the burden. And then I have 5 points, 5 practical ways to encourage others. And first of all, I want to say, be honest. If I use dishonesty to encourage, I'm flattering, not encouraging. Be clear on that. And I'll give you an example. I was there's an ordination in Mexico where my brother was involved that I wanted to fly to awful bad back, that was November. So I went down to, I bought a ticket last minute, and somehow my head and the times got jumbled up. And I got to the counter, American Airlines counter, at about 28 minutes before my flight left. And unknown to me, American Airlines has a policy that you can't, they won't give you your boarding pass if you're not there 30 minutes ahead of time. And would this guy help me out? No, guess what? He fooled around till there was no way anymore. And I don't know, I think I failed in encouraging him, period. But if I had tried to encourage him, it would have been wrong for me to say, hey, you're really helping me out here. You know, he just wasn't. That's not true. I could have found something else to say, encourage him, but not that. Okay, so the 5 practical ways to encourage others is by remembering they exist and that they have needs and struggles. It's funny to me how, or it's not really, actually when it's me. As easy as communication is in our day, how little we use it for remembering others and what they face. And I think there's some of you here that do a good job on this, and I appreciate that. It's something I've tried to grow in, but what does it take to send a text, to make a call? And so often, I don't know, when I see how tremendously that encourages me, especially, I had one, I guess it was, yeah, it was out in Oregon when I was having meetings there. My one message is, I was struggling for whatever reason on that message, and just a little while before church, one of the youth girls I knew out there from Bible school texted me and just said she's praying. Yeah, it's such an easy thing to do, and I'm sure she doesn't have a clue how much that helped me. I don't know why. I don't, just knowing somebody's praying helps, and you know, it's such an easy thing. Why don't we do it more? Can be in a card or a note, or it can be just putting a hand on their shoulder and letting them know you care, and that you're there if they want to talk. Okay, the second practical way is to suffer or rejoice with them. Is it sitting in silence for 7 days? I still have to admire Job's friends. I don't know. 7 days! I don't know if they were just crying or what, but sitting there for 7 days, just crying with them, mourning. It's the New Testament says, weep with them that weep, and addition to that is jump with those that jump. You know, in other words, when they're happy, be happy. When they're sad, be sad. That's how you encourage. You know, give them a shoulder to cry on or a person to party with. Sometimes sometimes it is just, I don't want to say party in a wrong way, but sometimes, especially for young people, sometimes there's a place where they just have to go out and have a good time with somebody else and lay down their heavy loads for a while. Okay, the third one. By expressing appreciation. And this can be so many, but I don't think there's hardly anyone I've seen that if you watch them long enough, there's not some nice thing you could think. Maybe it's just a thoughtful deed or a helping hand. I'll just give you an illustration of this. One thing that's interesting watching fellowship meals at Bible schools as well is when Sundays they eat off of trays. And you know how that trash can just gets fuller and fuller. And nobody has time to stop their talk and change that thing. And so there'll be a few that while they're talking, they kind of shove it down a little bit. Now I did my job and that helped out. And I just enjoy watching that because it tells me something. I've noticed the caliber of young person, especially I'm thinking of maybe for some reason, that will just stop, leave their friends, and go empty that trash can. Hey, it's worth noticing a person like that. Anyways, also, maybe express appreciation for honest desire. Maybe somebody does have needs in their life, but they have a desire to be honest, to do their job well. Express appreciation for that. Or maybe it's a conscientious heart. Sometimes seeing people already that struggle, and oh, they just feel like wicked. But you really appreciate their openness and honesty even in the struggle. Again, something we can express appreciation for. The fourth way of encouraging others is taking time for them and their interest. Just listening. You know, it's, again, odd to me how easy communication is for us today. Yet how, I don't have any way of rating this accurately, but at the same time, I doubt the percentage of people that feel very heard by others has gone up dramatically just because we can communicate easier. There's a lot of people that just don't feel like anybody has ever heard their real heart, just because nobody has taken time to really ask, maybe. Some people need to be dug out. They let them share their heart. You know, ask questions, especially sometimes you meet people that are very quiet and they just don't seem to have a need to share. Sometimes those are the most dangerous in that they need somebody just to pull them out of themselves. Ask questions in a nice way, of course. And then as they share, help them in where they struggle, commend them in what's good. And the fifth point in practical ways to encourage is include them in your life. Remember, a good friendship is always a two-way street. Don't expect that they need to be shoving all their stuff at you. You need to actually shove some stuff back. Now, it depends where they are in their journey. They may not always appreciate that. But ask them for their thoughts in a decision you face. Ask them for help in something you need. That's actually encouraging. To know that, hey, you know what? He wants my advice on that? Oh, why would he want my advice? You know, ask them with the help to help you in a struggle that you have, to hold you accountable. That's another thing that's fascinated me. I had made a commitment to a group at Bible school one time, actually, to pray for them for a while. And it was interesting which ones in that group actually held me accountable. It's not necessarily the ones you would think it was. And to me, that was kind of neat, is that they felt, oh, here's a chance to see if the teacher follows what he teaches, I guess. So anyway, that was great. Let them know how they've blessed you. I think that's very important. As you relate to people, they're a blessing to you. Maybe it's just small, but at least tell them what kind of blessing they are to you. And then couple last questions here. I want to ask you a question for you. Do you think my marriage, my home, and my church and my community would be different if I consistently practiced the art of encouragement? Would you all raise your hand if you think mine was different? No, that's fine. You don't have to. But the question I really have then, I want to ask myself that. But would people around you be different if you practice it more? What do you think? And I guess if you don't know, I would just encourage you, try it and see. The art of encouragement, the blessing and a responsibility God has given us. Let's stand for prayer.